All right. As promised, we have Michael Falkenberg here to talk about writs before the writ panel. You want to sit down? Michael's began his career with the State Council for Offenders, and then you came directly to the Court of Criminal Appeals. And then at the Court of Criminal Appeals, we were lucky enough to work together, and he was the head of the writ section for a while and was definitely a go-to resource for everybody I know at the court, particularly with writs of prohibition and mandamus and those types of things. Now he's an assistant public defender at the Harris County Public Defender's Office, and he is still doing writs dedicated to post-conviction litigation and extraordinary writ litigation. So I don't know that there's anybody more qualified now that Stauffacher is in Louisiana. So Michael Falkenberg, y'all.
Thanks, Carson. When I went to the Court of Criminal Appeals in 2008, I knew how to format a brief easily with no problems. In the intervening 13 years, Microsoft Word was supposedly getting better and more intuitive. And yet, now that I have to fight with it on a daily basis, I feel adrift. And so I'm particularly grateful to Doug Gladden because I needed all of that. Maybe some of you never had to leave the world of Microsoft Word, but I did, and I find it is my constant foe. And I'm particularly grateful that he called out the freaks among us who still insist on fully justifying our documents and including two spaces. I'm sorry, I know some of you feel attacked. It's not my intention. I have 30 minutes. I've taken out a lot of slides that I used to talk about, and we still have a lot left over. So we're going to talk about the basics of habeas corpus litigation, 1107 habeas corpus litigation, which proceeds on a dual-track system at the county level and then at the Court of Criminal Appeals four blocks south of here or something like that. We will do best practices and worst pitfalls and some defensive issues for the prosecutors who respond to these. What I've come to realize now that I have to do this in the free world is that this 30 minutes, and indeed my paper, which was updated as of a few weeks ago, covers the tip of the iceberg of post-conviction writ litigation. It gives you the rules and the basic cases that cover most of the water for it. But there's, especially for lawyers, for applicants, there's so much more involved. And I'm not yet the person to tell you how best to investigate these cases. But really, that's where a lot of the game is. And I think that the people, the four or five people who make a full-time living doing writs, as defense lawyers, as applicants' lawyers, divide up their representation into the investigation phase and the litigation phase. Because a lot of times, after you do a full investigation, it's just not, you can't move forward. You just didn't find anything that you can sustain. So for those of us on the applicant side, I think that we need to think of this in two phases. And it's complicated, especially when you're appointed on a case on a writ that's already been filed. And so this kind of work requires a different investment of time and a different kind of energy than normal trial cases and direct appeals require. My view, writ counsel has to do everything that Sixth Amendment trial counsel had to do, and maybe a little bit more, because now you've got to read the record, just like an appellate lawyer. You've got to reinvestigate everything. Pull the school records if you need to go there. Get the prosecutor's files. Master the trial record. Get school records, mental health stuff. All this investigation is, you know, the iceberg underwater. We're just talking about what you see floating in the above water. I say this a lot, but I think it's more and more true. It's unusual for the criminal lawyers, because I think that this is most like civil plaintiffs' work. We are suing the conviction. We're attacking the conviction in a collateral attack, which I like to think, makes you prosecutors akin to insurance defense lawyers.